I would love to know what life felt like for you the month prior to the invasion. Where were you? What were you thinking and feeling?
1 month before invasion. You know, actually, preparation for the invasion started for me at the beginning of December because I was in charge of this contingency plan we had for Ukraine.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And
okay.
I was reading a lot. I was looking for information everywhere. I was talking to people who did the same during the first stage of Russian invasion in 2014. And as I had certain experience, and we were trying to understand what might happen, what will be the challenges, how we can manage this, what can be done. But and actually, right before, 1 week before the invasion, we have done the first stage. We have completed the first stage of our response plan. And I completed it, you did something, we did this first stage, and I decided that maybe it's a good time for me to have a vacation. So I took 1 week of vacations, and I was on vacations where the war started.
Oh, you were. Where were you?
Yes, in Kyiv. I wanted to have some time for me to meet my friends, because I haven't seen them for a long time. I was very busy with all that stuff, the end of the year and preparation of this plan and everything. And I had some meetings. I had some, I wanted to stay in Kyiv, not to go anywhere. And just the day before the war, I felt like a kind of a very strong anxiety. I don't know why, but I was so nervous. And when my husband came home, I told him that maybe, I don't know why, but it's very, I'm very nervous. And he said that, okay, maybe we can wake up kids and go to our country house for a couple of days, because I'm on vacations, and maybe it will make me feel better. So we took some things with us and moved to our country house. And we came there at 2 a.m., and in a couple of hours, we were woke up by the explosions not far from our country house, because the Gostomel airport is not far from there. It's around 15 kilometers, and it was like the glasses were trembling, and just... and we were trying to understand what's going on, to find any information in the internet, and it was almost impossible, because at that time nobody could say what's going on. We understood that something is happening in Kyiv. We heard the sound of explosion from the west and from the east of our house, and we didn't know what to do. We really were shocked,
And then what happened?
We understood that Kyiv was bombed, the same as the Gostomel airport, the same as Zhytomyr, the next city on our way to west. And we were hesitating, because it's if you go on the road, it's very hard to be safe. You know, if there is a bombing, then step right, step left, you just can't do this. You are on the open space, right? And and we were waiting for the explosions to stop. We decided to go to my mom's house in Khmelnytsky, and we just collected whatever we had. We took some clothes for kids from the country house. It's not like, you know, we are doing some gardening there. It's not like country clothes. Actually, we were looking for something warm for kids, and we left.
How did you get there?
We had the car, so we were lucky enough, because people couldn't get out of Kyiv for a lot of hours, because it was like a traffic jam at the exit of out of Kiev, and we were happy because we were further west, you know, 20 mm-hmm. kilometers further from this place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we were happy to get to the main road very quickly. And but it took us 10 hours almost to get just 280 kilometers to my mom's house.
Wow.
Yes.
Because of the traffic?
Yes. A lot of cars, a lot of
people. Did you have enough petrol for your car?
Yes, it was possible to get fuel. It was given by small portions like 15 liters, 10 liters, but it was possible to get it.
Wow.
And the prices still were normal. There were very long queues to the petrol stations, but anyway, we were lucky we were prepared. We had a full tank because as I was preparing this, so these recommendations I knew, and we had the car with the full tank of petrol. So we, for the first day of travel, we were prepared, but it was like we came to my mom's house and we spent the night, and it wasn't, and that was the second sleepless night, because first night we were just sleeping a couple of hours.
Mm-hmm.
And this night, again, it wasn't possible to sleep because of the shock. And I don't know the English word for this, but we are trembling. It's when you can't, and you can stop.
Yeah. You were, not the earth, but you were. Trembling.
Me, my husband. There were like attacks, nervous panic attacks. I don't know how to call it.
From That's time the to right time. Word.
And you go to sleep, and in an hour you get up, trembling, and again you're trying to get to sleep, and no way. And in the morning, when we learned that, we planned to go to our Lviv hub because we organized everything and it was possible to go there because everything was prepared there. Lisa was waiting for any team members with families. We knew about everything. We had the list of people, Telegram channel. We were chatting. We were trying to support each other. But I understood that the Lviv is also has an air alarm. The same morning, and Vinnytsia, another city, was bombed. So we were not, we didn't know what to do. And our friends from Poland proposed us to go to their house and to accommodate us in Poland. So we were hesitating for some time, but. As my daughter was having this, I don't know, nervous tic, she was like doing like this because of she was so frightened that she cannot stop doing this, and it was very hard to see her like, and we decided that maybe we should go there, but it was a very difficult decision because I have three kids. My eldest kid is 19, and he's not to go out of Ukraine. So my husband wasn't planning to go anywhere. My eldest son was also stays in Khmelnytsky right now, and my mom also she decided to stay with them. She said that she's too old to change anything in her life. She wants to be there, and so it was like to split the family. To leave the part of my heart there and to decide that maybe I need to go abroad because of the younger kids.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided to go to the border. At the end of the day, we finally came to the border, but there were huge queues of cars and... there was at that day there was only one place where it was possible to go on foot because my husband planned to take the car back, and I was with my kids to go on foot. We knew that there are a lot of cars, so we thought that maybe on foot it will be much easier. And the same day, it wasn't yet a lot of traffic, a lot of trains or buses going to the border. So there was nothing organized yet.
Yeah.
And when we came there and we understood on the GPS, it was shown that there are still a lot of kilometers to the border, but there is a queue. And some people from the local villages, they said that, oh my God, what's happening? You won't cross the border even tomorrow because of the queue and everything. And we understood that we do not have enough fuel, but at the same time, you can't leave the turn your turn because otherwise other car will immediately step on your place. And if you leave, you want to get to the end of the queue. And some people were going along this queue with their personal belongings just to the border, but it was more than 10 kilometers to there, and it was night, and it was very cold. We didn't know what to do. We stayed there for a couple of hours. We understood that we made only 10 meters maybe or 15 meters during this time.
Wow.
And a friend from Poland, he told that there was a decision from Polish and Ukrainian government to open some more places where it's possible to go on foot. And we decided to go there. It was not far from there, but actually I was so nervous that I don't remember the name of this place. So I don't know where I crossed the border. There was also a very, very long queue, and we were moving in full darkness. It wasn't in the village. It was in the field. Mm. And we understood that we are to stay there for the night. There were some people walking along the cars and saying, please switch off the engines, please switch off the lights, because they were afraid that we are a very good goal for the planes. We've heard helicopters. We explain our kids that they have to be like, if something happens, they are to get out of the car and to find the hole and to hide there, and we train them. We were to train them because, you know, the cars on the road is something that is a good goal. And we understood that this night will be also without sleep because my husband couldn't sleep and I was trying to sleep at least a bit. And it was almost impossible because we were changing all the time. We were trying to switch on the engine and switch off, switch on, switch off. And you are making like very, very small steps toward the border. Mm-hmm. And at 6 o'clock, we got up and we understood that maybe we are to go on foot.
In the meantime, how were your younger children handling this?
Badly.
Yeah.
It was very hard to stay for 2 days in the car, and they were. Yeah. It was like we had no normal food. The water was almost the bottle was water was almost empty. Like something like this for people, it's nothing. And and you understand that maybe not all the belongings you are taking you need. So we just decided to take some. What we can with us, and my husband managed to stop the bus that was going to the border, and they agreed to take me and my daughter and our belongings there to the border, and my husband and my son decided to go on foot. So we were in this bus. It was crowded, a lot of people, a lot of women with kids of all ages. And very small kids. Some of them had fever. They were sick. It was very hot, and my daughter was like with all these stops. So the bus was moving very slowly, and she was laying on the floor because she couldn't breathe. It was very hard for her. I don't know. Maybe it's because of she was nervous, or because she was just sick because of this like.
Movement.
The movement, yes. I don't know, but she was laying on the floor all the way to the border, and there we understood that we were very, very far from the border. Actually, we left the car very, very far from the border, 12 kilometers, 17 kilometers, I don't know, but very, very far. So when we got to the border, there were also already a lot of people. They were just not let to cross, because the bodyguards say that they need to collect some a group of people, and then they will let us go. And it was early morning. We were standing. It was cold, very cold. The temperature below zero. You waited for a couple of hours. My daughter wanted to drink, to eat. We had almost nothing to eat. We had some, the water was finished, and so I came to the bodyguards and I asked them if they have any water, and actually they were very kind. They shared their own bottle with a bit of water, so they shared it with us, and I was able to give it to my daughter. But I thought that it will be easy to cross the border. We were waiting just for my husband to bring the son to me. But in fact, we stayed there for 5 more hours, not just waiting for them, but because we were not let to cross the border. And first there was one group of people who crossed, then there was another group of people who crossed, because the border guards decided to let only people who has the kids of 1 year and till 3 years, you know. And my kids are older, so and we were waiting for so long time, and people were coming and coming and coming. And I understood that though we are in front rows, but people from other sides are coming and standing in front of us. So there is no chance we will cross very quickly. And people got nervous. We were, everyone was crying that it's unhuman, because there is no toilet, there is no water. We are standing for so long time there in this crowd. And I started to cry, and when I told my daughter that if there is a chance, you have to run, because they won't stop you. You are small, they won't stop you, and maybe this way you start to cry, mom, and then we will join you, because you have already crossed. Maybe this way we will be able to cross this. And in fact, then a lot of people started, you know, like, started to break the chain of border guards, and we ran. We just ran to the border.
Wow.
but it was like this point on the border, it wasn't for crossing on foot, and that's why it was very long from this first post to the border itself. So it was like 1 kilometer and a half or something like this. So I wasn't able, with all these belongings, I wasn't able to run a lot. And I said to kids that you have to run, and I will follow. I will definitely follow. And we will cross, because we are all already on the territory of the border, and it means that we will cross.
At this point, you have your daughter with you and your middle son.
Yes.
How old are both of them?
Daughter is 10 and son is 16.
And so where was your husband at this point?
He wasn't planning to cross the border and to go with us, but it wasn't possible anyway. But he wanted to help somehow to the country, and he wasn't planning to escape. So he just let she brought us to the border and returned to our to my mom's city. Mm-hmm. And now he is there. He's helping us because he's almost 50. He's almost 50, and just he has no previous military experience. He tried to get to the territory defense, but they said that at the moment they need people who has military experience. So he was volunteering. He's giving blood
Oh my goodness.
Today he was in just giving blood. That is what he can do.
Wow. So right now, are you in Poland?
Yes, I'm in Poland, in a small village in central Poland.
Wow.
Yes.
And how did you find the place where you are? Connections?
Oh, it's a hard question for me because I used to be like a resource for others. And the person who is responsible for many things, and I used to be responsible not only for my life, but for other people around me. And at the moment, I find myself in a completely different situation where I'm just... this is... everybody is helping, you know. Everybody is helping, and actually they help me in everything, and I just... I have to accept... their help, and that is very uncommon for me. Mm-hmm. I'm living in a small village. There is no public transport at all. My kids have at the moment they go to school.
Wow.
Yes, we decided that it would be better than to stay at home and to watch these videos because they can't get forget what happened in Ukraine. They have nightmares, they have problems with their nervous system. And so we decided that maybe it would be better for them to go to school. And my friends here, they helped me very much. They just were like angels for us. Mm. I didn't manage to get an apartment. I've signed an agreement already, and I thought that on Monday, this Monday, I will be able to move to the apartment close to a small studio, nothing fancy, very small studio close to the school. But I didn't manage to do this because suddenly, the day when I was to move, the owner told me that the apartment is not vacant, it's not ready for us, though I paid 2 months of deposit. And still, I have to be with my friends to stay in their house at the moment because there is no other choice for us.
Will you get your money back?
Not yet. I'm waiting. Maybe he will have another apartment in the mid of April. So still, I didn't get anything. So I'm still waiting because it's a big problem in Poland now to find a place where to live. Mm-hmm. And the prices are huge. And in this area where I am now, just there are no any apartments for lease. There is nothing, just empty. And the market is empty, absolutely. Mm-hmm. There are also many Ukrainian families. And in the school, we have other Ukrainian kids as well.
Natalia, have you been able to sleep?
I'm taking medicines.
Good.
I'm taking medicines. I had something brought from Ukraine, and I continue to take them because otherwise it's not possible for me to sleep. And you know, in Poland, they feel that the war is very close for them as well. And all of them, they watch the TV, and Ukrainians and the war is all the time on TV. It's all the time in the conversations of people. It's everywhere.
Yeah. There's no refuge from it.
No.
How are your children?
I wanted to say fine. But they are fine as for the situation, maybe.
Yeah.
They need to find their way in new class, you know. They need to accustom to the
and a new language. New language.
Yes. New language, new school, new people. To understand that they lost... well, they They lost their friends because their friends are scattered. They are in different cities. They are somewhere. It's not like you can call someone and have them for a walk, you know, and to meet and to celebrate birthday, for example, to to have pizza somewhere. Nothing of that kind. It's a different reality.
Yeah.
They understand that they have to adopt somehow, but they feel suspended as well as we feel, you know. At the moment, I'm trying to make inventory of what still is stable in my life. And actually, job is the only thing that is stable. I don't have a full family now because we are split. But family is something very important for me, and it was always very important for me. Life is, it won't be the same anyway.
Yeah.
We are changing. I feel that we have changed a lot. I'm happy that Ukraine is consolidated. It's like a nation, and everybody sees it, and everybody understands that it's not like it was described before, you know. And I saw these processes before, and I'm happy to see this. But at the same time, I understand that if we turn back, it will be different Kyiv. It will be different places, and the places I won't recognize. And each day, you are just prepared that something might happen to what you have left, because in Kyiv, for example, we still have my husband's family, his mother and father and brother. And when something is bombed to you, immediately you just try to understand if it somehow is it about your family or about your friends, or how it's, if anyone affected. And if you know that the house of my relative, it was bombed, and it was destroyed, and but we in the morning we called them, we asked if they maybe they will need a place to live, so they can use our apartment in Kyiv to live there. But we were lucky to we were happy to know that she managed to leave Kyiv before.
Oh, good.
Yes, and that is like, you know, that and it's very, very hard each time. It's very hard to see your friends, to see your teammates with this, you know, backgrounds. You know, someone is sitting and you see a nice background, and it looks like very professional and so on and so on. But you know that there is air attack, and the person is actually not working from the basement or working from the, I don't know, bathroom, because it's safe to stay there. And everybody is doing incredible efforts to continue working, to continue being helpful, to continue being useful, and to work, and it's and to support each other. We have the team that is supporting each other very, very much, very much indeed.
How easy is it for you to communicate with your son and husband?
It's very hard, because sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's difficult, because they live. It's our mood, our state is a roller coaster each day, and several times per day, and you don't know in which mood you will find your dearest. Right? Will be day after not sleepless night, or will they be after good, after they read something good from the news? You never know. And when you talk to them. It's like it's good to understand that everything is okay, but sometimes we prefer to write. We want to see each other, but sometimes it's okay to write, just to text messages and to see if it's a good time to talk.
Yeah. What is your son doing?
He is a student, but there are no studies at the university at the moment. He was studying at the Kyiv National University. but at the same time, he was working as a QA, and he continues to work as a QA now.
What is that?
It's a quality assurance engineer. He's working for an IT company. Not for our company, it's a different company.
So he is not volunteering in the military at this point?
No, he's not. He's making, you know, he's that is volunteering. If you call it volunteering, is to find these Telegram channels where the wrong information is shared, for example, and try to stop them. They're sending the messages in social media, you know, or try to ban someone from posting propaganda. That is the kind of things he's doing, and also he's helping his friends who are in Kyiv and who is in Kyiv and in other parts of Ukraine. He's as Khmelnytsky is rather safe place, so he's buying things and helping them with he sends like what is needed there.
So he's a little bit like you. He's doing the kind of administrative helpful things that you have done for DocsME, it sounds like.
Not exactly, but he's more in IT, you know. He's more like this is the way how he finds himself more useful, you know.
Yeah.
My mom was making these rugs. I don't know how to call it. It's to cover the equipment, you know, not to be seen from the air. They make small pieces, small. Like laces, and they put them on the net, and then they send it to the army. So she was going there and helping, and was preparing food for refugees in the city. So, but everybody is helping now, and that is normal. That is not something. You know, just it's not something fantastic, incredible. It's everybody is doing this now. Absolutely, yeah. Everybody.
Yeah. So, Natalia, you were in charge of preparing DocsME for a war, right?
I was in charge of making this plan and making a contingency plan, and I was in charge of budgeting and preparing. Yes, the overall proposal, yes, how we will handle this.
So there really is a grand difference between preparing and then experiencing it, right?
Yes.
In retrospect, what do you think you understood that it would be like, and what did you not understand?
We thought that maybe there will be problems with mobile communication, and it didn't happen. It happened in some areas, but there was a step from mobile operators where they decided to unite the networks. So if one station is of one operator is destroyed, then the other one from the different operator is working. So that is it is called internal roaming. So you can change the operator. What else? We were well prepared with Lviv Hub. We were well prepared with the number of people who will go there. With Lviv Hub, did everything correctly. What else? Maybe we were to urge people, more people, to leave Ukraine before the war started, but it wasn't like till the very end. There were chances, very high chances, that the war wouldn't start, because the same number of military troops we have seen the last April, and the war didn't start then. And Ukraine lives in such situation during eight years already.
Yes,
you know, all the time we have this threat from Russia, maybe this only this that might be done beforehand. But again, it's not easy, because people didn't want to leave their families. They didn't want to leave the family and to go by themselves, right? And that was something more complicated to because, you know, if your kid goes to school and you don't feel like the war will start tomorrow, it's very difficult to collect your belongings and to move somewhere for a long period of time, right? To understand that it might be for a year or for...
Especially if you've had a threat for 8 years. Why would you do it? Yeah.
Right.
So what strikes me is that your company did everything to physically prepare, but really there's no way to emotionally prepare for this, is there?
It's not possible.
No way. Because you've never experienced it.
We had kind of similar experience when the first attack happened on Crimea and Donetsk and Lugansk, but then it was different because, you know, feeling like the bombs are exploding close to you, it's a bit different.
Yes.
And feeling that you have to escape and you have to, everything is changing completely. That's, you think about very, very basic needs to cover. You think about just where to find food, where to find water, what to do, how to get an hour of sleep, you know. It's absolutely different. It's like you understand that your belongings do not worth of anything if there is no water, food, or medicines, or something like that. And there is no fuel, you can't go further, and there is nowhere to fill in the tank. And no, it's like very, very simple things, very, very simple. And you can't imagine, living in Europe, you can't imagine that there might be a problem with drinking water.
Yeah.
It's something very easy to get. It's something that is available everywhere.
But now... In Poland, do you have access to food and water?
more than necessary. We are just, of course. We just understood that our basic needs are very small, in fact. And we don't need a lot of things. At the moment, all basic needs are covered. What we need is just to plan, you know, what we need is just to get at least, to be able at least to plan for any period of time, to have this time frame somehow stated, you know.
Yeah. And your husband and son, do they have plenty of food and water where they are?
Yes, yes. At the moment, yes. It's safe there, and they have of everything.
So, Natalia, during the day, are you actually able to work?
Yes, that is. I don't know. Maybe it happens also to some other people, but that is my way of escaping. Maybe I started to work 100% from the maybe. We came to Poland on Saturday, and from Monday I started to work full time, 100% of time. And it's how I escape from the situation, and it's how I can be useful and it's the better way for me now.
Well, I think it's a very healthy escape because it helps you feel part of a team, you're contributing, and it probably calms your nervous system to be able to be productive.
I think so, yes.
Is your husband able to work?
No.
No. So that's probably harder for him.
Yes, it's hard, and he is looking for something right now because volunteering is good, but it's also he needs to do something.
Yeah. And you're sleeping a little better because of, well, you have a more stable environment, and medicine is always helpful for sleeping. I'm glad you have that.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Yes.
Before we close, is there anything else you would like to share?
Maybe that I appreciate what Doximi is doing for the team right now, because we shared this decision with the team that Doximi is supporting them and will support any of the team members during this war, including those who decided to join army. And that is, at the moment, for many of us, it's the only stability we have in our lives. Mm-hmm. I couldn't find words to tell you how much appreciated that Brandon came to visit us and to leave Hub. That other people doing the money that are collected and sent for charity to help Ukraine in this war. So that is something I have said already. Thank you, but maybe I want to use this interview as well to say thank you once again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so many things. I think we just only in these extreme circumstances do we understand the power of that kind of love and concern, because you need it. You need it. Natalia, yes. Thank you. I don't know if talking about your experience is helpful or if it actually kind of makes it reoccur, the trauma, but I hope in some measure it was helpful to share your story.
Yes, I think so.
Good.
The more we, you know, maybe people will learn about it and maybe they will see that it's how it happens and that it's not possible to prepare. Even if we are 100% prepared, we have no, we cannot prepare 100%.
Well, and because we don't know what we would be preparing for, right? You didn't know what would happen.
But, you know, mostly we are pretty close to what how we see the how it might happen and how what we will see, you know, mm-hmm. if the war starts.
Yeah.
We were not, that was the worst option that this kind of events might happen, but it happened, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, Biden will be coming to Poland today.
Yes, I know.
So that I don't. Is he going to Warsaw? Do you know?
No, I don't know.
That might be kept a secret anyway. Natalia, I can't thank you enough for speaking with me. And my heart and prayers will be with your family.
Thank you. Thank you very
and
much.
I hope you sleep well tonight.
I will do my best.
All right. Take
medicine's
good care.
Help.
Yes. Amen. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye.